Today's sponsor is Audible.com, who has more than 180,000 audiobooks and spoken word audio products. Get a free audiobook of your choice at www.audibletrial.com/shark. Welcome to another episode of the Movies, Films, and Flicks podcast. I'm your host, John Lasswolf, and joining me, as always, are my co-hosts, Mark Hoffmeyer.
Dolph Lundgren stole from me.
What did he steal?
Wait. What would he steal? Like, did you report it?
Well, not the car, but what he did, I let him get away with that. I was like, Dolph Lundgren just stole my car.
And Grand Theft Lundgren-y.
Yeah, I mean, that was pretty funny, actually. Like, it's a good party story, you know? But no, he stole from me. He has a movie out now called Shark Lake.
He does?
Yeah.
So he stole your DVD copy of Shark Lake?
No, he stole my idea, Squid Lake.
Oh, okay.
You know about Squid Lake. We recorded the most insane podcast ever for it on Shark Dropper.
I wasn't there.
You weren't there.
People.
See, that makes me think of when you wrote up like that bogus movie review of a movie that didn't exist called like Sharks
in Sweden. He stole from me twice. Squid Lake and Sharks in. I didn't even think about that.
So he just totally. Listeners, this is like years ago. Mark wrote an article, like a movie review, and he put it on our website. And after he put it up, the next time we spoke, I was like, so Mark, he did a movie called Sharks in Sweden. He just laughed at me. He's like, no, I made it up. So I'll bet Dolph stumbled across this thing, right? And then recently he heard when you were guesting on Shark Dropper and you guys did Squid Lake. And he's like, whoa, how about Sharks in Venice, Squid Lake, Shark Lake, starring Dolph Lundgren, directed by Dolph Lundgren, written by Dolph Lundgren.
And they shot it in Florida where I used to live. He's stealing everything from me.
Was it in Tampa Bay?
No, Pensacola.
Close enough.
Yeah, I know. Like, I used to live in Tallahassee. So he stole from me, guys.
Yeah. John Lemmigood, what did Dolph Lundgren steal from you?
Dude, he stole the physique I was supposed to have when I grew up as a spiky-haired tall kid. But
Are you about the same height as the Lundgren? Lundgren-nator?
He's got like an inch and a half. Isn't he like 6'4"? He's 6'5".
He's 6'5", yeah.
6'5".
He's got a solid 2 inches on me. And his jaw is like twice as wide as mine.
And what you don't know is his spiky hair is about 4 inches high, too. So he's like a total of 6'9" when he's walking around.
Oh, man.
All of a sudden, he's like Godzilla height.
He's like the guy from Static X.
Like, he's too tall to walk through a drive-thru.
Yeah.
It's like, sorry, man. You gotta... Well, first thing, you gotta get a car. And two, you're just too tall.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
He comes through in his hover round, plus size like 4-wheel drive hover round.
I would be surprised if he drives a smart car. I feel like that's something he would do. If I was a guy that tall, I would drive a car that small.
If he was in a smart car, it would be like the Flintstones. He just smashes feet through the bottom of the car and just walk with it.
Probably go so faster than my car.
Speaking of smart cars, my buddy Chris and I were on set the other day and we were bored and we were talking about movie sequels that shouldn't happen. And we said Duel 2, where a truck gets chased by a Prius. But, like, you never know where the Prius is at because it's so quiet. Like, it could be right behind you.
That sounds terrifying.
And if you're close enough to read this, they can't see you in the rearview mirror.
Yeah, exactly. And, I mean, like, trucks need gas. Like, this Prius could stalk this truck. You know,
the truck could just
go on some rough terrain and it's all over for the Prius. But, imagine, that could be a scary horror film like Prius. Because like you can hear like Maximum Overdrive, you heard all the cars. But a Prius, it could be right behind me right now and I wouldn't know it.
But you see, like with the Duel truck, like that 70s movie Duel, like that truck is like analogous to an Anaconda in Anaconda. Where in the movie Anaconda. Whereas a Prius, it's like a piranha. Like I feel like there would be a whole school, like a fleet of Priuses, of Prii. Like swarming the road at you, and so then like when the truck like tries to run it off the road, like it would knock 3 or 4 Priuses off the road like at once, right? But there's still a fleet of Priuses just attacking it, like a bunch of X-wings coming down on a Star Destroyer.
I mean, eventually one's going to get stuck underneath a rim, and like that truck is going up.
They can almost sacrifice themselves.
It's like popcorn kernels, like in your teeth. That's what the Priuses are to this truck.
They're like those robotic squid things in the third Matrix movie. they all just form a swarm and come at the shooters, even though they know that like 50% of them are going to get destroyed. It's like a hive mind as long as one succeeds.
Well,
I like it.
I'm never buying a Prius then. That's just terrifying. All right,
dude. I feel like we own the rights to this movie now. We just hashed out a lot of these
details.
In
3 years, Dolph Lundgren's going to make it.
It's going to be called Prius Sharks in Sweden.
He's probably going to start making it after he listens to this podcast.
Yeah.
Sharks are hybrids, we know that he secretly got the idea from us.
Yep. Oh, hybrid sharks.
Oh, man. All right, guys. I think it's time to start the podcast like we always do with listener questions. Mark, I think you got the questions for us this week.
Yeah, so I got these questions from some of my coworkers, and the first one is from a man who likes to call himself Mad Dog. Actually, he hates to be called Mad Dog, but that's what I call him. And the first question is, we were working together on this show Resurrection about two years ago, and this is where it comes from. He's like, Mark, I've been telling you to watch Maniac Cop for 2 years. Why haven't you watched it?
Wait, what's it called?
Maniac Cop. It's Maniac like a B movie.
It's from the 80s. It stars Bruce Campbell.
Yeah. And so, like, you know, I'm kind of thinking about it, and I recommend movies to people all the time, and I get annoyed when they don't watch the movies I recommend. And then people recommend movies to me, then I don't watch them. And then I get annoyed when they get annoyed at me.
It's the circle of life.
I really had to take, like, a deep look into myself for this. I guess the reason I haven't watched Maniac Cop is because I pretty much have to buy it. Like, it's not on any of the channels. So, I mean, it's like I really got to go out of my way to watch it. Like, if he handed it to me.
Right. Like, you know what I mean? You would consider watching it.
Yeah.
Maybe. I don't know. Yeah. You weren't busy.
But even when people give me movies, I don't watch them sometimes. So, I mean.
But you watched that thing I gave you, right? Blades of Glory? Yeah.
I watched Swim Fan.
You know what I've had sitting on top of my DVD player? Because if it's a movie like I really need to make a point to watch, I just make a little stack on top of my Blu-ray DVD player. Is 2 years ago you sent me Honey Part 2.
Yeah.
and so, like, I did Blue Crush 2 when you sent me Blue Crush 2. I still got to do a certified bro on Honey 2. But, like, when I think about watching that, like, it's hard to wrap my head around. But so it's funny. When I read this question, right, it had me thinking, like, I can't remember anything about Maniac Cop. I actually had to look up Maniac Cop to remember that Bruce Campbell was in it. And I know I saw it, though. I think I saw it when I was, like, drinking in my mother's basement after she fell asleep with my friends in, like, eighth grade or something.
I was going to say when you were 7.
Well, then I was, like, I don't know, like 12.
No, I'm joking.
13 or 14, yeah. Maybe. But, like, I, because my friends and I would kind of sneak beer down in the basement during sleepovers and quotes or whatever. We'd like, you know, have a couple six packs and watch a bunch of bad movies on the USA Network on a Friday night, you know, starting at like 10 p.m. And I'm almost positive that's how I saw Maniac Cop. But I don't remember a thing about that movie. So now I'm realizing, like, I've got to go see Maniac Cop. You know, this movie spawned 2 sequels. Yeah, there's a Maniac Cop 3. And there's a 2008 short film called Maniac Cop, which I believe was done in hopes of building up money for a proper remake. Because if you look at the movie the poster for this 2008 short film, it's like they literally had an artist like have the old movie sleeve in front of them and just copied it. It's like the same. If you go on IMDb and you go to one of those movies and you see the suggestions for the other ones, it looks like the exact same movie poster down there for you to choose from.
Right.
So I'm going to... What's up, Lovesworth?
I was about to say, like, I've never heard of Maniac Cop, but I want to take a stab at trying to describe the movie, even though I know absolutely nothing about it. Okay. Aside from the fact that Bruce Campbell's in it.
That's very informative, though, because that goes from you thinking it's a Charles Bronson Death Wish-ish movie to something even more
zany. Honestly, Bruce Campbell is kind of the first guy that popped in my mind when I hear Maniac Cop for some reason.
I mean... I wonder if Bruce Campbell was listening, would he be embarrassed by that statement?
Yeah. I mean, I wasn't thinking Peter O'Toole.
TV shows, though.
Yeah. All right. So there's a scene where, like, he's sitting in the police chief's office, and he's just getting, like, you know, screamed at, like, you know, Maniac Cop, you've done it again. Yeah, you need and to keep that thing holstered.
He always has like a cigar down to the last third, right?
Yeah, yeah, pretty much.
Badges and guns.
Yeah. Give me your gun now. He just unloads his entire armory on the chief's desk.
And then I got an idea where he busts a drug raid and like he tells everybody, he's like, everybody put your hands on the table. Don't move and don't talk. And then some guy sneezes and he shoots him. And then some guy says, bless you. Then he shoots him because he has to like stick to his rules. You know what I mean? And he's like, where's the money? And the guys can't talk. Yeah. He's like, oh, you're going to play hardball with me? You're not going to talk? Oh, I'll tell you. And then he shoots him. And then he goes to the next guy. Tell me where it is. And the guy's like, I don't know. Then he gets shot. And then the guy next to him's like, this is a real quagmire. I don't know what to do.
This reminds me of like when we were talking about Kung Fury, like in episode 17 or so, and how Lazavath was saying how he loved that Triceracop was known for just shooting people in the dick.
Yeah, just straight up. Like perfect shots too.
Yeah. I also imagine like a car chase where it ends with like him driving off a rooftop, but I have no idea how he got the car on the rooftop in the first place.
And then don't even show it landing, just show him parking it later.
Yeah. Like what?
That reminds me of Major League 2. There's a movie where Omar Epps and Jesse the Body Ventura do. And Jesse Ventura jumps off this like 20-story building and he lands on his feet. Charlie Sheen's watching the trailer going, what? It was like White Lightning and like Black Thunder or White Thunder and Black Light. I don't know what. It's one of those movies. But Jesse Ventura
and
MRF.
The Rock and Samuel L. thought would happen when they jumped off of that building and the other guys. They just thought they'd land.
Yeah, there was no bushes.
Yeah, and I also imagine like a Skinamax quality kind of sex scene where you have like kind of cheap jazz music playing in the background.
Like a Wolf Cop type thing.
No, I want the saxophonist from The Lost Boys.
Okay.
That really buff guy with, like, the long Michael Bolton hair before Michael Bolton started losing his hair, and he's got, like, chiseled pecs, and he's just, like, he's, like, moving his body. Like, I'm doing it as if people can see me during the podcast. I'm, like, moving my shoulders to the music, like, doing a sexy dance while I'm playing the saxophone.
Just think
that guy was in a real band.
John looks like a wave fool right now.
Yeah. Like a fucking...
Like, dude, it looks like you dislocated your shoulder. You just kept going with it.
I keep expecting to hear a snap.
Oh,
if only people could see us.
So,
no, guys, I really want to see this movie now. I don't know if it's probably doesn't resemble the movie we described, but
we need to pump on our hybrid shark maniac Prius brakes for a minute. So, to answer the question, Mark, why haven't you watched it? He's been telling you to watch it for 2 years.
I think because he told me to watch it.
No one likes that.
He's a great dude and his taste in horror movies is awesome, and like, but for some reason he's like, man, you should watch it. I'm like, don't tell me what to do.
Yeah.
So if he said don't watch it, you won't like it, I'll be like, well, I'm gonna go home and watch it.
Maniac Cop.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, don't, Mark, what's up, do you want me to watch Maniac Cop? He says no, you don't watch Maniac Cop. Like,
I would have watched it.
I'm watching it.
I would have watched it 2 years ago on set.
Sounds like something that Tracy Morgan would do on 30 Rock. Like,
yeah, that's right.
You don't tell me what not to watch. And he just goes and watches it like right then. Yeah. He's like, Chris, get the Blu-ray player.
Where's this movie, Liz Lemon?
I'm just saying, like, of all the simplicity of this question, like, this is one of my favorite listener questions in a while, even though it's like, in a way, one of the least thoughtful questions. It's like it turned into an inflexive discussion.
It was pretty much just an attack on me, and I don't like it.
That's probably why it's a good time.
So the next one is from Riley Flanagan. And I keep calling, I want to call him Riley Cooper. I don't know why, but he's a listener to the pod, worked with him for a long time. And he says, what's the ideal buffness level for an action hero? Is it Terry Crews level as President Camacho in Idiocracy? Or is it Steven Seagal in Force of Execution? Maybe neither. I got the two people. And I know who you're going to say, Levin Good. So before you get to it, I'm going to tell you. I got two guesses. But before we get – I want to tell you what I think. Keanu Reeves in Speed – and Eric Bana in Troy. And then like Emily Blunt from Edge of Tomorrow.
Really?
So like, but I like Keanu Reeves because it's basically, he does some curls, he does some push-ups, he probably goes to the gym, but like he's not really on a workout plan because he's dedicated to work. Like he probably works out when he can. And then Eric Bana just is kind of like that old like 40-year-old dude that is just military tough. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's just like, hey, man, I swing a sword. Like, he probably does some push-ups every now and again, lifts some rocks. I don't know what they did back then in ancient times. But for me, it's Keanu Reeves in Speed, Eric Bana in Troy, and Emily Blunt in Edge of Tomorrow. Because Jessica Biel is good in Blade Trinity, but that's like too much. You can't sustain that. I think your body would fall apart.
Right.
So I'm going with those three.
She only had that body for like about a year, because she had it in that and Stealth, and they came out within like 6 month period. Mm-hmm. And then after that, she always stayed in shape, you know, but like it was nothing. It's like she must have shed 10 pounds of muscle in the 3 years after that.
Yeah, I mean, you got to be like in a lab with like a mask on lifting weights while being fed chicken intravenously.
Well, and you know what else? Like, she put on that muscle while she was still in her like early or mid 20s, which is when it's a lot easier for folks to do that. Like Ryan Reynolds, when he put on muscle for like Blade Trinity, and then you see him right after Blade Trinity in Amityville, right? And then he's actually bigger because he's not as lean. Like, you're looking at that like, Jesus, he was always in good shape, but where'd that come from? But you know, he did that when he was still under 30, you know? But then all of a sudden Deadpool comes around and you think, oh gosh, he's gonna fill that suit. It's like, well, he's 39 years old, so like he's in great shape, but it's not like he put on 10 pounds of muscle in a couple months like he did a decade ago.
Yeah, well, and also the movie took like a decade to film, so he had plenty of like prep time.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah, he could have been the Rock huge.
But I gotta go Keanu Speed. That's just what I'm thinking. So because I just think that's sustainable. He was tough, but like, you know, that's where I'm at. That's where I'm like the Keanu of action. Like, I could do that. You know, I could do some curls when I get home from work. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So John, are you going to say Brad Pitt from Troy?
No. But that was like Brad Pitt in his best shape ever. But, you know, if his character was any character other than the name of a demigod, like, I'd be like, that's a little too big for that time frame.
Ah.
Like, yeah, he looked like he was eating, you know, sifted whey protein before there was sifted whey protein, like swinging a lead sword that was 10 feet long to build those muscles. No, for me, like, usually for me, it's not a certain build. It's like, but the certain kind of personality has to match the body. I think that's the mistake that a lot of movies make when they think that they have the guy who has just the right look, but he doesn't have the personality to match the character. And those movies tank, you know, so like The Rock is huge, right? And Schwarzenegger are huge, but they were both very charismatic and larger than life. Then you have like Ryan Reynolds, right? And his different levels of muscular that he's had. But like, he's never had the kind of personality that would fit a 6'3", 250 pounder. He has the personality of the guy who had to survive by his wits and then later went to the gym. You know what I mean? Like, he's never been a larger-than-life character. He's a snarky, snippety, I'm going to jab you with my words even though I can pound you with my hands. And so, like, I think that works. But I think the most fun is the Scott Adkins, Ryan Reynolds kind of build. I like that build. It's unrealistically good shape for a regular dude to have, but who spends a lot of time in a bar. Like, you know, you see these characters and they spend a lot of time in bars, like Scott Adkins
chugging beer all the time. Yeah,
and El Gringo, he drinks like six beers in a 90-minute movie. I'm just thinking, like, how do I still see your abs? And like Ryan Reynolds, he's like taking shots five different times during the Deadpool movie. Like, are you kidding me? How are you keeping that body? But I think those are cool, fun bodies. Like, they're not. When you see them next to the bad guy, you're not like, he's just going to flick him and kill him. But he's still tough. He's tough enough for you to look up to and be like, and look at your girlfriend or your wife and be like, I could look like that, but I don't want to.
And then, you know what Riley said? He said Sylvester Stallone from Cliffhanger. Which,
dude, Stallone in Cliffhanger, like.
But I could picture him hanging on rocks. You know what I mean?
His cut lines were so deep in that. They were like Rambo 3 deep cuts.
But he wasn't too big, I don't think.
Back then he was still only like, you know, 180 pounds.
Yeah, so like he looked like a guy that could be out there climbing.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, he looks like he could climb with one hand, like do a one-handed pull-up and then like just scoot his hand up. Like what about you? Do a one-handed salmon ladder.
Ooh.
Ooh.
What about you, Laz?
So when I first read this question, the first thing that popped in mind was the handshake scene from Predator between Carl Weathers and Arnold Schwarzenegger.
The world explodes.
Yeah. Like that'll be a good buffness level. Like if you can imitate that handshake scene. But then I thought about it, I'm like, well, you know, that's just that's funny and that's really cool looking. But for me, like, I'm a huge James Bond fan, so I gotta go back to Sean Connery. Cause you gotta remember, he actually competed in Mr. Universe before he became an actor. So he was like a bodybuilder back in the day. It's one of the reasons.
It was like 1952 or 53. Yeah. It was really long ago. Like,
it's one of the reasons why he got cast as Bond. Like he was like a intimidating looking dude, but he was like kind of svelte enough to fit into a nice tuxedo. You know, without like ripping the seams apart just from trying to, you know, get his arms in or something.
You can't be blowing out your suit when you're in an action scene, you know?
Yeah.
By the time he was Bond, he was kind of like, I'm a thin guy who drinks scotch three times a day build.
So I think for me, the appropriate buffness level is enough to intimidate someone, but you can still fit comfortably into a tuxedo.
How about like Pierce Brosnan Goldeneye like shape?
I don't know. He wasn't really like a buff guy.
He was all hair.
Yeah.
He was all hair. Like the pecs were just hair.
Yeah.
Daniel Craig kind of brought it back though, as far as like physique.
But for one movie though, and then he went, I'm not doing this again.
Daniel Craig was the only James Bond where you're like, that. Do you think he's on creatine, bro? He's on creatine.
Yeah. But then he's like, I'm never doing it again.
Casino Royale, like whenever he had that polo on, I'm just like, I feel bad for that polo right now.
You know how like when you saw the trailer for Casino Royale and you see him coming out of the water, every single version of the trailer had him coming out of the water at the beach, right, and the sun glistening and shining. So when he was like practically naked, he always looked happy. It's like his skin was smiling, but whenever he was in a suit, he looked unhappy. He's like, I wasted all that time in the gym. One shot at the beach.
They needed trailer moments. Like, that trailer moment and like was one of the most famous trailer moments, aside from maybe like Zeta Jones and Entrapment.
I knew I had to see that movie just because of his build. And I had to see Entrapment just because of Catherine Zeta-Jones scooting that beautiful butt under those lasers and those yoga pants.
Yeah, she was in the Graham Norton show, and she's like, she was talking about that movie, and Will Smith started freaking out about it. Like, Will Smith got weird about it. He's like, oh, I remember that moment. And he, like, went on about it for about 5 minutes. Like, oh, my gosh.
Wait. Can we back up? What did you think I was going to pick, Mark, for superhero body?
Oh, Bill Murray, Space Jam.
Really? What did you think I was going to pick? Don't say Zac Efron.
No, that was too obvious.
Were you going to say Rock?
No, I didn't have a second, actually, because I figured the first would be it, and then I was just going to make up a second one.
Space Jam. Good old Bill Murray.
Keanu Reeves and Speed, man. That's where it's at.
You know, it's interesting. Like, when you think back to him, if you just looked at a photograph of him, he looks small. But the reason he looks small is because he has no facial hair and he has short hair. So he's just like – it looks like a tiny little head, but that was actually like the physically largest that he might have like ever been.
Yeah.
Except for maybe now, he's almost like in as good a shape now, close anyway, like with the John Wick era.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, no, like John Wick, he was just kind of always clothed.
So yeah. He was like Bond. He was always suited up.
Yeah. I mean, he looked good. I mean, you can tell he worked out, but you know, he never really, he wasn't like The Rock or Schwarzenegger or Carl Weathers.
You know what's funny? Speaking of the my buddy and I did like a joke on the Predator handshake, and we both just felt terrible about ourselves. And we're both in shape, but I was like, yeah, I'm never doing that again in my life.
No.
Dylan, you son of a bitch.
All right, so thank you guys for the questions. I think we broke a record for question answering.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, thanks again, Mad Dog and Riley.
Yeah, not Mad Cooper. Dog and Riley. That sounds like a Bill Murray movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does. That's not like Mad Dog and Glory.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Time to move on to the main topic of the day. Levin Good, what are we talking about this week?
Well, you know, we're steering away from a lot of the themes that we normally pick, and instead we're just going to talk about two really popular movies that came out recently. Later we're going to talk about Cloverfield, and last month Deadpool came out. And Deadpool has been one hell of a talking point all over the internet, almost as long as the internet has been in all the households in America. I mean, this movie has had one hell of an evolution, and Ryan Reynolds has pretty much been there every step of the way. But this was a huge record-breaking R-rated superhero movie. That's the kind of thing studios are normally worried about. And I, for one, like, for me, this is like my movie of the year.
Ugh.
Really?
Wow. I love it, but it's like a good, it's a good movie. It's a good movie.
Let's I want to hear Levin Good's
You should have seen Levin Good's face. If you would have been eating something, he would have been spitting things all over the place and like choking.
I'm alone. I would have. No one's here to give me the Heimlich.
If you took like a big, if you were eating a big turkey wing right now, you know those big like things that Vikings eat. Like if you'd have been munching on that when I said that comment, you would be on the floor right now.
It's like a cartoon where you see the bone sideways in my neck, sticking out on both sides.
He just swallowed a turkey leg.
Dude, like I see for me, like this whole movie, like the whole running time, I was just smiling the whole time. I can't say that about many movies ever.
No, I agree. I was entertained from start to finish. Like, even the credits. Like, they were just entertaining.
Credits were great, yeah.
You know what I found out, though?
Credits, the closing credits, yeah, it was all wonderful.
I felt bad about the intro because, you know, the intro credits, they say, like, you know, they make, like, the British villain. They call the writers the real heroes. They call the director. They don't give any of the names, and they call the director an overpaid douche. But yeah. You know the director only got $250,000 for this movie, so he basically that's not anything for a director. So they called him an overpaid douche, and he got underpaid.
Yeah. Was he getting points on the back end?
I mean, he got another contract with Fox, but like, I don't think I read through some articles, and they said they might be bonuses, but he didn't. I don't think he had anything on the back end of it. I'm sure they like you know bought him a new Jetta,
yeah,
and then you know they let him direct something. But I mean,
well, no, he has a nice new entry on his resume. Deadpool.
Yeah, I mean, but to call him an overpaid douche, I was like, well, he's not really an overpaid douche. Like, actually a guy that invested a lot of time and you know his life into it and made a really decent movie for just you know for just below $60 million.
Who directed?
Is that what the budget Deadpool? Was?
Yeah,
60.
Yeah. What was his name?
Tim Miller. Yeah. Like, he did a lot of special effects beforehand. And I don't know if you guys saw this. Sorry to jump on your speech there. But I just saw a video today about the special effects of Deadpool. And there's a ton of that stuff with CGI. So he had a really deep, big background in CGI. So if you watch that video, the Deadpool special effects, like a lot of the car chases when he was sitting on that bridge, like he was just looking down at a green screen. There he wasn't like the CGI in there is it's there, but it's not really there. Like it's not, it works well with the story. And I think cause they hired him to actually maybe save money on the CGI because he could visualize it.
That's good. That makes sense. Yeah, you mentioned the special effects. I was actually like that was the one thing I was nervous about with the movie. Like I maybe a little bit, you know, idealistically thinking, but I had this vision that Ryan Reynolds would have an excellent grip on the character and that he'd have a lot of sit downs with the director and that they'd really find a way to make his personality work well for Deadpool and work well with the vision of the story. Like, but the special effects had me nervous, especially when I saw Colossus. In the trailers, like that, it had me nervous for other aspects. But Colossus was the only thing that I wasn't super thrilled about in the whole movie. Everything else, I never noticed anything that made me flinch that I didn't like in the effects. You know, those slow-mo, like corkscrew acrobatics with the bullets going through three heads in a row. I was loving all of it. I thought they did a great job filming. The fights, too. I thought that was a great job.
So right now, as it stands, it's the 8th highest Marvel film. Now, this is all branches of Marvel, X-Men, Iron Man, everything like that. It's the number one revenge film of all time, which is pretty interesting. I guess, you know, like that's what it said on Box Office Mojo. It's the 3rd highest origin story behind Guardians and Spider-Man. It's going to pass Guardians. And it's the number one R-rated comic book movie.
money-wise, because it's already at $711 million. And if
wow,
but if it would have toned itself down a little bit for China, I bet you it would be right around 900 right now. So I don't know why they wouldn't make cuts. I don't know the story behind it. You know, I was in the meetings, but you know, I was probably on my phone when they were talking to the Chinese board. You know, I was like, I was like, Reynolds, you talk to him. but for some reason they didn't go to China, which I think cost them potentially, I don't know, $1 billion, but it potentially cost them, you know, 20%, which could have pumped them up to 900 million.
Well, you know, I guess they were just so concerned with the integrity of the movie, and I'm sure they didn't expect it to do this well.
Yeah.
I mean, they were hoping and maybe even expecting it to break a lot of studios' mindsets of what this could accomplish, but I don't think anyone thought it would be this successful. I'm thrilled that it is.
Yeah. And this is what I liked about it, and it reminded me a lot of the first Iron Man, where it really felt authentic. It felt organic. And I think everybody aboard, you know, they kind of dedicated themselves to getting the character right. I think they understood that Deadpool fans are maniacs, and they stayed true to that. And I think it's one of the more, like, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy, even Ant-Man to a certain extent, they just felt authentic and it felt organic. And I think they respected the viewers, and it hit on all cylinders. Even though the love story in it's kind of garbage, but it's like it knows what it is. It's fun. My wife was kind of like, it could have been raunchier. Like, they could have gone further. But I think it worked. It's a movie, and it reminded me a lot of like the new Star Wars, Jurassic World, Fast 7, in that it knew its audience and it just told a story that I think people wanted to hear. They kept the story simple and it just told it well and focused on characters. I think that's why it's $711 million right now.
You know, I don't know if this is a fair comparison to make to Guardians, and I'm only using Guardians because you just mentioned it just now. But so if I look at each character in the Guardians, all the major characters, and you know, you have all different kinds, you know, like Drax and Rocket, and what Groot is hardly a character to me sometimes, but you know, Star-Lord and all them. A couple of them, you feel like they loved every minute that they were on camera, or that they were playing that role. But Rocket, when I'm listening to Bradley Cooper, it doesn't sound to me like he loves that role all the time. I don't know how to explain it better than that. Whether you're a good guy, a bad guy, angry or happy, he didn't seem like his character was loving it all the time. Whereas like in Deadpool, the bad guy Ajax, even when he's being a jerk, even when he's being made fun of when Deadpool learns that his name is Francis, like, I feel like that actor loved being Ajax all the time, and that Marina Baccarin loved being Vanessa all the time, and TJ Miller and Ryan Reynolds. I feel like everyone in this movie loved being their characters all the time, and I don't feel that for Guardians of the Galaxy.
Speaking of feeling, I listened to I'll back up what you just said. I listened to the iTunes podcast today, Meet the Filmmakers, and it was the four of those. It was Marina Baccarin, TJ Miller, Ryan Reynolds, and Ajax. I forget his name.
New transporter.
Yeah, transporter. And actually, Ajax was aside from Ryan Reynolds, he was like a huge fan of Deadpool. TJ Miller knew nothing about Deadpool. Ajax got annoyed about it and let TJ Miller borrow the Deadpool comic books. Marina Baccarin loved the role because she's like, I'd never really read anything like that. I hadn't been this character. And TJ Miller was jealous of Ryan Reynolds because Ryan Reynolds was so funny in the role, because TJ Miller is normally the funniest part of a movie. So he got jealous. So he decided he had to nail every moment that he was in. So like everyone sort of enjoyed being there. It was a really uncomfortable interview, though. It was like, wasn't really run paneled well, but they did. There was everyone sort of enjoyed being there. Yeah, so I mean, I think there was a joy to be in that. But I mean, with Rocket, he wasn't really on set. I think maybe he was trying something. Maybe Rocket was pretty cynical too. So I haven't really read anything about that. But like you said, yeah, Deadpool, they all loved being there. I mean, this movie's a labor of love. But to be fair, this movie with the leaked test footage, it was greenlit a month after Guardians hit big. So, I mean, that's Guardians of the movie where the guy literally, the main character literally talks about his spaceship being covered in cum. You know, and like, they're basically a bunch of a-holes. And like it's a silly movie where they play with the tropes of action films where they trip or they're bored walking in slow motion, stuff like that. So, I mean, so I guess when I hear people talking about Deadpool and how, you know, it's a funny comic book film and how it's bringing everything back, I kind of look at Kick-Ass, which was an R-rated comic book hit. I look at, you know, even before Deadpool came out, Thor, they hired that Taika Waititi, who did What We Do in the Shadows, to direct Thor to make it funnier before Deadpool hit. So a lot of people are saying Deadpool is going to change things, and I'm just worried they don't change things for the worse. Like, they just force an R rating on things as opposed to letting the characters be authentic.
So how do you feel about the announcement of the possibility of Wolverine 3 being R?
Well, all right. I think if the script is right, the first script was the writer's strike, which was X-Men Origins. So, like, no one really knew what was going on with the script. They had an untested director who had only done indies in South Africa. So he totally tanked on it because they didn't have a script. You know, same thing happened in Quantum of Solace. Wolverine, they originally were going to shoot it as with Darren Aronofsky as an R-rated movie. But he left and Kate.
Oh, were they?
Yeah. Kate and Leopold's director, James Mangold, stepped in. And they kind of had to tone it down to a PG-13, and I think it lost a lot of its identity because of politics behind the scenes. So if they can get somebody who cares as deeply about the movie and the script isn't, like, reactionary – I hear they're doing Old Man Wolverine, bringing back Liev Schreiber. I mean, if they can really nail the tone, if they can bring a writer who loves Wolverine, then I'm all for the R-rated cut. I think in the other X-Men films, like X2, he pulled off PG-13 just fine with his claws. But if they can make the R-rated organic, like, you know, sometimes they're like the new R-rated cut, and it's just some heads getting chopped off. Like, if they can make it, you know, like that, I think it'll work. But it needs to be at the script level. And that's what Deadpool had going for it, was the script was really good.
Yeah, that movie has such a history. I read about it, not in super detail, but how, like, 11 years ago, Ryan Reynolds was already talking to people about this, which is 2 years before X-Men Origins Wolverine came out.
Mm-hmm.
And they were talking about selling the rights back off for Deadpool because they had it in, like, this umbrella of things that they got all at once. And then they held on to it. And then, like you said, with the writer's strike, like, there was no guidance for Deadpool. They weren't bringing people in. And Ryan Reynolds said that he had to kind of make up all the dialogue that he basically said in that movie. Yeah. And he was trusted because he spent the most time reading about Deadpool. And even still, like, he was just – the movie didn't really fit it, the character, very well. And then
People love Ryan. People, when they talk about X-Men Origins, they and Ryan Reynolds comes up, they're like, I liked him in his role.
My favorite part of the movie, but, like, he still didn't fit there.
Yeah, he had one of my favorite lines that no one ever quotes. He's like, you're right. Everyone else was real serious, and he kind of stuck out. But he was like, imagine taking some swords to your ex-girlfriend's wedding. I love that line.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
It was in the elevator scene right before he came out and was deflecting bullets with his swords.
Yeah, he cut one in half, I think.
Like, it was like the comic book moment of comic book movies in a silly way. But, I mean, yeah, I loved seeing him in that role, even though I hated sort of what they did to Deadpool.
Yeah.
And they made, you know, in the end, like, when you finally got Deadpool, the true Deadpool, the mutant Deadpool in that, he doesn't talk, and they farcically seal his mouth shut, and then you see the action figure of that Deadpool in the new Deadpool movie. It was one of, like, the 89 fourth wall breakers.
You know, that's why you like Ryan Reynolds and Scott Atkins. They were both in X-Men Origins.
Dude, those two. I love those guys.
But no, I think that this one too, like, they did a good job with the side characters. I do, you know, like that IKEA stuff. I mean, I'm Swedish, so I love the IKEA stuff. But I guess Deadpool tells a story of a former mercenary type who falls in love with a woman. He ends up with cancer. He goes and gets a treatment, which makes his body look like the topographical map of Utah. And
after Freddy had a night.
And then he wants to find the guy that did it to him. And he refuses to go back to the love of his life, which they spend like a 20-minute montage on, because he's afraid she'll hate him the way he looks. But then she gets kidnapped, and then he has to go save her, and a big fight happens. And then
it's interesting that it is really a terrible story, but it's a terrible story told so well.
Yeah. Well, like, if you think about, like, movies that people want, like, you know, if you tell somebody that Star Wars The Force Awakens is kind of like the first Star Wars, like, they'll want to punch you in the face. If you make fun of Jurassic World, they're going to want to, you know, hit you in the I don't know, nose. If you complain about Fast 7, they're like, you just don't get it, bro. Like, it's just when you do a movie that people want, they really ignore a lot of that stuff and they're able just to roll with it. And there's, like, nothing wrong with that.
Like the fact that the whole time that he's trying to get back to Ajax is because at one point Ajax says that he could have fixed Ryan Reynolds' face.
Yeah.
But he won't. Like, he made it sound like, oh, yeah, it's easy. I just won't do it. He's just being a jerk. And the whole movie, like, the character's like, yeah, now you got to fix my face. He's like, wait, you believe that? Like, when I was sitting there watching the movie, I didn't even believe that. Like, I'm just like, that doesn't even make any biological sense, but whatever, fine. It's a part of the movie. I don't care. I'm on board. Cause again, it's like Anthony Hopkins narrating, you know, The Grinch. All of a sudden it took something that I only liked as a child. And I'm like, this is such a great story. Tell me more, Sir Anthony Hopkins.
Yeah, if Morgan Freeman did a Burger King commercial, I'd drive there immediately. But no, but it does. And like, look at the little touches. There's a bar that Ryan Reynolds goes to and TJ Miller works there, Weasel. And in the bar, there's like all these ne'er-do-wells, but you begin to like the guys. And then when TJ Miller gets threatened by the bad guys later, the bar kind of sticks up for TJ Miller. Like, it's little touches like that. There's some humanity to it. There's some I think my least favorite part was all like the when he called people like crap stained puppet weasels and stuff like that. Like, I'm being nice for the pod. But I don't know. I love the character. It was a lot of fun. But yeah, it's already on IMDb's like top 100 and it's top 250.
So what was. Let's go around and let's talk about a favorite aspect of the movie that we didn't talk about yet. Lazaveth.
I appreciated the the romance in the movie, actually. I wasn't really expecting that, but I think it was actually really well done. You had two kind of people kind of on the fringes of society who just, they're basically two peas in a pod, and it was just really cool to see them just kind of like falling in love with each other. Like, it's something that you would not expect in the R-rated superhero movie. It was very sweet. Yeah.
And they became domesticated. Like, they sort of like, you know, they started off kind of like rough looking, and then it cut to them like reading books together. Well,
doing other things too.
And then there was that really cute, corny thing where they were celebrating all the holidays, including some silly national recognition days. So, like, happy female empowerment day, happy St. Patty's Day. And they have a sex scene to all these things.
And it fits their characters, which is the best part. So, yeah, that the romance was actually really well done in this movie.
What do you think, Mark?
I like the X-Men references. Like, you know, who's Professor X? Is it James McAvoy or Patrick Stewart? And they could only afford Colossus and Teenage Nuclear Sonic Sandwich.
Yeah.
And
Negasonic, not Mega, but Negasonic Teenage Forehead.
Is that real? Is she a real X-Men character, or did they just make her?
Yeah, she was like in one comic, and she was the one they could afford. Like, they wanted like a bunch of like Taskmaster and a bunch of weird characters, but they couldn't afford any of them.
Oh, nice.
So they wanted more, but those were the two they could afford. And they were always making jokes like, why are you two the only ones here at the X Mansion? Like, it's probably the only ones we could afford. And that was actually like a throwaway line that Ryan Reynolds did, and they kept it in the film. But I like those references. What did I call her? Teenage Mutant Ninja Sandwich? I'm not gonna ever get this name right. But I like that X Men. I like that they were playful with it. I liked all the Hugh Jackman references. There's a theory that this movie takes place in a world with X Men, where actors are playing the X Men.
Hmm.
What do you mean?
So
say that again.
Okay.
Just because I feel like I missed something,
Deadpool exists with the X-Men, right?
Right.
But like, Hugh Jackman is playing Wolverine, who exists in Deadpool's world. There was a theory.
Oh.
And that Hugh Jackman's Wolverine exists.
No. That Hugh Jackman, like in our world, Hugh Jackman plays a Wolverine who exists in the real world.
So basically, you're saying
James McAvoy and Patrick Stewart.
Yeah. So there's a real there's a real X-Men. Then you have the movie versions of them played by actors. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Now I got it. Now I got it. Now I think I understand.
I mean, that's like Cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs, but
okay. No, because I couldn't get it. Now I totally understand what you were saying, and it makes sense. But I could not get my frame of mind wrapped. That's really, and I didn't catch that.
Yeah,
I just thought he was making all different levels of meta references.
Well, he was, and on Empire, like my favorite movie magazine, this guy brings it up to Reynolds, and Reynolds makes fun of him for about 5 minutes. And it's not true, but I like that you leave that open. So that's my favorite aspect.
So I love the closing credits for two reasons. The extra scene, you know, like at the end of all the Marvel movies, they have like their Nick Fury scene or some scene with a couple characters. Way back at the start of this whole Avengers universe, that was like people were just shitting themselves with awesomeness over these scenes. And so, like, we all knew there would be something, and the internet did a good job of letting us know so that we wouldn't leave early. But not only did he come out and just flat out say, like, hey, there's going to be Deadpool 2. And by the way, Cable's going to be in it. Isn't that going to be cool? But he did it the whole time doing a backdrop of Ferris Bueller's Day Off, which – just as, you know, a super movie geek, I'm just sitting there happy as a clam. Like, I thought it was adorable.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, you might be sitting there thinking, like, it was stupid. I don't know.
No,
like,
I love the ending of Ferris Bueller. Okay. But you know what? I watch Ferris Bueller now that I'm older, and I'm like, man, that Ferris is kind of a dick. But I could see if Ferris went to the military, and I think he could become Deadpool.
What, yeah. What if they're the same dude?
Oh.
Yeah.
What if Ferris Bueller was real? Matthew Broderick played him, and Ferris Bueller was Ryan Reynolds.
Guys,
Deadpool character Wade Wilson.
I think we need to take time to ponder these questions. So while we try to
work the cross-eyes out of John, yeah,
while we try to figure out these connections, we'll take a quick break. We'll see you in a little bit.
Robert.
Mm-hmm.
John.
Yes.
Complete the sequence.
Mm-hmm.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1. What are we doing?
Counting.
Oh, counting, yeah. Counting what?
Down?
Counting down what? Everything?
Everything and anything.
Anything and everything?
That's right. The three of us, we count down from 5 down to 1. Top 5, everything and anything that you can think of. You want to know the top 5 shittiest bands? You want to know the top 5 movies? Listen, Shark Dropper Studios, sharkdropper.com.
Welcome back to Movies, Films, and Flicks. Yeah. So did we ever figure out the that thing we were talking about before we went to break? You know, the thing.
That thing. I mean, John got his eyes uncrossed, which was great.
Yeah.
I was too busy focusing on that.
Right.
But no, that thing, I know nothing about that. I forgot about that thing.
Oh, you don't remember the thing?
I don't remember
the thing that we were talking about?
The stuff in that guy.
The guy. And wait, what's it? And yeah.
The who? I feel like that band's been around for like 100 years.
Yeah, horrible halftime show a couple years back.
Yeah. Like, I love the idea of the Who, but I don't want to see them play the halftime show.
Yeah, oh,
I don't want that.
But all I don't right. want to diminish the Who. Like, I love the Who.
Oh, they did that themselves.
Yeah,
by with that halftime show.
I mean, I'd rather watch like a Foghat cover band.
Yeah. All right, guys. I think we have one more listener question.
Yep, we do. And this one is from Chris Kelly, often contributor. And this one is, what should the Broken Lizard team do for their next movie? So Broken Lizard, they did Super Troopers, Club Dread, Beer Fest, and Slammin' Salmon. And so this crew, they're doing Super Troopers 2 right now. But I don't know if you guys have seen this, but not many people have. But during the writer's strike, there wasn't really anything going on. So they went and made a movie called The Slammin' Salmon, where they just work in a restaurant. It's like a higher scale restaurant, and they're kind of waiters in it. But no, I loved it. Like, I thought it was a funny little film. Michael Clark Duncan was in it. He's since passed away. But I want a Slammin' Salmon 2 with Terry Crews as like the new owner.
is the new plus sized owner. Yeah,
because like in the like Michael Clark Duncan is so funny. There's a scene he's like, you know, maraschino cherries. It's named after Rocky Maraschino. And then some guy's like, well, you know, it's Rocky Marciano, not Rocky Marciano. And here's our one F-bomb. Michael Clark Duncan goes, whatever, motherfucker. And but he has, like, tears in his eyes when he says it. So he gets all emotional. And, like, he's always, like, doing fake rhymes and punching people. And a wedding ring gets eaten. And then hilarity ensues. Like, it's just like, I don't know, I liked it. I liked spending time with them. And I want another movie with that. That's, like, that's what I want. Or I want to see them remake The 13th Warrior.
Yeah.
That would be interesting.
I want to see him make Potfest. It was, I mean, I don't know, it was jokingly implied at the end of Beer Fest when they met Willie Nelson. But I think that would be amazing to watch, where they just like go to like some underground pot smoking competition. You know, I just want to see Landfill 2 like somehow bite the dust, and then Landfill 3
Once you start smoking pot, you all lose your competitive edge. You're just happy to be there.
Well, you can say the same thing about beer, right?
Yeah. I could see it work, like special like bong smoking, like their biggest competition are like the Dutch and the Jamaicans.
Yeah.
I don't know, whoever. Like it's in Amsterdam, like the Dutch are like the number one team.
Really?
You know, like, you know, well, I mean, there could be some good games. It could be like underwater bong smoking. Yeah. It could be spliff juggling.
Yeah.
I don't know what else. Hot boxing. I don't know if that's a thing.
Yeah. Well, I feel like now's the time is right. Since,
I was watching that Netflix.
Oh, go ahead. Go ahead.
I was watching that Netflix show. I'm one of those people who, like, even if it was legal, doesn't like pot. I just never did. I call it pot. I don't even know if that's like a geeky square way to refer to it, if that's normal. Like, yes. I don't even know.
But either way,
like, I know hotboxing is still like – people still use that term. I thought that was like an 80s term or older. And I was watching that show on Netflix, that show Love, and they use that term in that show.
Oh, nice. So I'm hip.
And so I felt like I validated what I thought that I knew about pot on that show the other day.
Nice.
So we got Slammin' Salmon 2, Pop Fest, and what do you got, Love and Good?
So, you know, what's funny is that we're all kind of making like either direct or indirect sequels. And for me, I love Judge Dredd, but I'd like to see them do an indirect sequel of that where they're not playing the same characters though, like you would in Slammin' Salmon 2 or like Pop Fest. I'd like to see them do a horror take on either a Paranormal Activity style movie or a haunted house movie like House on a Haunted Hill, but give it that Club Dread humor flavor with some murder. Like, I'd like to see them do that. And I don't mean like those like all black comedy things like that 50 Shades of Black or that Paranormal Activity with the black people.
Or even Scary Movie 5, it doesn't just have to be.
Right, like, but not even like that, not that farcical level, but more like where there's actually a plot, like in Club Dread, that you can follow. So I'd like them to do that kind of semi-serious, more satirical than farcical approach.
Like Club Dread,
yeah, but again, with like Paranormal Activity theme or House on Haunted Hill theme, like I'd love to see something else like that. Yeah. And I want Brittany Daniel back because I love that one.
And Bill Paxton. But he kind of ripped off Kurt Russell from Captain Ron. But I love Bill Paxton in that movie. Son of a bitch.
He'll rip off a different Kurt Russell character.
Play Pina Colada Berg.
He can rip off Furious 7's Mr. Nobody as the owner of the mansion in their House on Haunted Hill take.
Oh, I like it. Go. Yeah. What's the what's the status on their Super Troopers 2? That got funded, right? They went through crowdfunding.
I think they're either filming it or I haven't paid attention to their Twitter, but they're either filming it or they're.
Did they hit their stretch goals? Because I.
Oh yeah.
Okay, because like I knew like, well, here's our main goal, but if you want like more crazy stuff, like we gotta hit these goals later on.
Yeah, they just cast Chris Hemsworth as Thor. That's how much money they got.
Oh wow. Yeah, he doesn't come cheap. Like half his salary is basically just for conditioner.
That's like the next $15 million on the Kickstarter.
Yeah, they didn't make 50. They couldn't get Robert Downey Jr. as Iron Man.
Wow. All right. Yeah, I think that was a good listener question. I think the answer was
Megasonic Meatball teenage club dread.
Mark, yeah. I love hearing you trying to say that mutant's name is like you doing Bane and Eddie Redmayne impressions and Michael Caine impressions.
Megasonic teenage warhead.
It's not happening.
That was basically it. It's Nega, though, not Mega.
Oh, jeez Louise.
With an N, which is totally, it's Negasonic teenage warhead. But you were typo off.
Nega, Bega, Buddha, Baba.
Nega, Bega's Mambo number 5.
That's right.
All right, Lemon Good, why don't you give us the intro for this this sequel to this horror movie?
So, yeah, we all saw 10 Cloverfield Lane, which is the address of the bomb shelter survivalist bunker that John Goodman's character made in 10 Cloverfield Lane. And this is an indirect, I'll call an indirect sequel to Cloverfield, where pretty much the whole movie takes place. And, you know, we say it for everything, total spoilers on everything. So don't listen to this until you've seen the movie. But the whole movie takes place essentially in this bunker until the last 10 or 15 minutes. And you're pretty much relating to the psychology of the people in the bunker, the person who has the bunker, and then the woman, in this case, Mary Elizabeth Winstead, who was kind of against her will taken into this bunker after a car accident leaves her unconscious, and John Goodman, in his mind anyway, saves her by pulling her into this bunker. And of course, she doesn't feel saved and she doesn't want to be there. And there's another survivor in this bunker. And this is where our movie develops. And we learn what the incident, the attack was that happened on the surface. And we learn how legitimate this attack was.
And so there's Emmett, Michelle, and Howard in a bunker.
I'm at Michelle and Howard. You know, it's funny because I think like I'm going to keep saying Mary Elizabeth Winstead and John Goodman and the other guy.
Yeah, Emmett. John Gallagher Jr.
It's like I'll say Emmett, John Goodman, and Mary.
Every time you say bunker, though, I think about Iron Man 2, where Sam Rockwell is talking about a missile that can blow up a bunker beneath the bunker that you just blew up. That movie is crazy, but I love that line.
You know, one thing I'd like to bring up just right at the start, which in a way has us talking more about the end of the movie than the beginning, which seems to be a weird trend with me in our podcast discussions about movies, but the title of this movie is 10 Cloverfield Lane. If the title of this movie was instead 10 Spring Hill Court, would you ever have made a connection between this movie and Cloverfield?
No.
Well, eventually, when you watch the movie.
The aliens at the end don't look anything like the Cloverfield monster.
No.
And there are spaceships in the end. There are no spaceships in Cloverfield.
Yeah, I guess you're right. But
in Cloverfield, we have one giant Mudo monster with huge, like, 18 legs and tentacles and stuff. It's taller than a skyscraper. And this, we have three different kinds of spaceships, a weird, like, alien dog that's a lot like a smaller version of those mechanized aliens in Edge of Tomorrow, chasing her around for a needlessly long time. And then there's that spaceship that has, like, an alien with a beak, like an octopus inside of the spaceship. Like, it really didn't look anything like the monster from Cloverfield. And, you know, so again, there are no ships and one giant alien versus all sorts of ships and all sorts of very different looking aliens. I don't really see a connection.
You know, I'm going to be honest. It's been a while since I've seen the first Cloverfield movie. So I barely remember kind of how the monster, there were also like several smaller monsters, right?
Yeah, they were like the little gross things in the tunnels, and it like they shot off of the big monster.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, in the movie, that was left to two different thoughts. One was, because they looked kind of different but superficially similar, was that they were its offspring that were coming off. And then another idea that came out that I heard people talking about after Pacific Rim was that it was almost like they were ectoparasites on this creature from wherever it's from.
They're like remoras?
Yeah.
Yeah, like, you know, like lice, kind of.
Oh, gross. That's nasty.
Yeah.
But regardless of what they were, you know, coming right off, I don't know. But yeah, so now, don't get me wrong, I like mentally, just as a movie fan, I like connecting this to the original Cloverfield. they did that. I'm just saying there's not really a connection other than them saying, hey, people come into the movie, there's a connection.
Yeah. I kind of feel like that first alien that attacked the hipsters in the first one was like the recon, like sent down to test defenses and see what was up. And they probably dropped him around the world. And then, like John Goodman said, so basically Mary Elizabeth Winstead gets chained up in this bunker and there's two people in there. You have no idea who's good or who's good or bad. John Goodman said he worked with the Navy, and he said that, you know, there's an attack going on. He doesn't know what the attack is, but they've seen some explosions. You see a woman who is just, like, sick from some gas, and she looks really gross.
That's the first moment that it's legitimized to us, that it's dangerous outside.
And of course it happens when Mary Elizabeth Winstead is trying to escape.
Can I just say like real quick, like I'm glad like the movie, because I thought it was gonna do this, like they were gonna have the audience guessing the whole time whether or not John Goodman was like legit, whether or not there was like an actual alien invasion. So I'm glad like about like 20 minutes in the movie you find out like, oh, it's a real alien invasion. So they got that off the table. I'm really glad they made a decision, you know, fairly early into the movie.
And I appreciated that.
We just
know
there was an attack. We didn't know it was aliens 20 minutes in.
But then I liked the noises that – remember Goodman heard that noise? He's like, that's not any sound I've ever heard before. Mm. You know, but I you know, Goodman's character seems smarter than he let on. Like Emmett, the little guy in there with the busted arm, I guess he got into the bunker. He said he broke in and he hurt his arm because he helped John Goodman build it. And John Goodman had a family who left him. But there's a lot of backstory in this for a little movie. But and then Emmett says that Howard was talking about space worms and parasites. Like, this guy seems to know more than he's letting on.
But you mean Emmett?
Yeah, no, Howard, John Goodman. And I love this movie. I thought the marketing was great. I know I'm jumping into that, but no. So eventually, as we go on, you know, they try to flee the bunker because they learn some funky stuff about John Goodman. People die. She escapes, and there's an alien that has a beak.
Right.
You know, I'm just gonna say, like, it's cool that they let on, like John said earlier, that okay, there really is an attack. Like, it was 20 or 30 minutes in. I kind of was hoping for personally and expecting the style where you never know anything. And the moment that Mary Elizabeth Winstead, however she does, you know, knocking him over the head or killing him and getting him out the door, the moment that you see the light of day and she kind of goes into like the over blaring light and disappears into it is when they would roll the credits. And like, you never know. Like I was expecting that.
That would annoy me so much. You know, I've seen like a lot of those movies and I've always felt like really annoyed because I feel like they just like they're being like really wishy-washy. Like, I feel like, you know, you need to make decisions when it comes to storytelling and you need to justify those decisions. So I'm glad like they made a hard decision. Like, OK, there's definitely, you know, some sort of attack or alien invasion. Let's try to like see what we can make of it. Plot wise.
Well, so first of all, I loved this movie. I feel like there could be, it's very early in the year, but like if the year ended now, I'd want to hear Oscar buzz for Winstead and Goodman, to be honest. I think they both did amazing jobs, especially Goodman, in fact.
Oh, no love for Emmett, whatever his name was.
I mean, he was great, but it didn't stand out to quite that spectacular.
Goodman was terrifying, dude. Oh, as far as a human villains get me, I saw The Devil, Seven, aside from The Troll from Air Scared Stupid, but I'm normally really afraid of human villains. And John Goodman's Howard in this film scares me. And there's some questions about whether or not he's actually the real villain, but I think he is. I think it's
even if he's not, he's sick.
Yeah. That's cool. And like, just the way he clenches his fists and the way he can casually like murder and the way his mannerisms are and the way so spoiler, but Emmett gets shot in the face because they're trying to make a suit to get out to survive the gas. And John Goodman pulls out this big bucket of acid. He's threatening him to find out what they were making, blah, blah, blah. But he just murders a guy. So the other guy's out of the picture. And the next time you see him – so the first one you meet John Goodman, he's scruffy. He's kind of gross. But after he murders Emmett, he shaves and he gets well-dressed and he's dressing himself better. And it's just creepy. It's a creepy thing. And like he, you know, it's
It felt like a relationship nesting phase. Like now it's just us.
Yeah, and he's just a creepy. but then they add enough of just enough of like maybe he is not. Maybe he's just weird. I mean, it's a well-made film. I think if this movie was crap, the backlash against the marketing would have been insane. But since it's a good film and critics and audiences love it, they're cool with it not being a movie about a giant lizard beast with remoras flying off of it killing hipsters. You know, like a lot of people, I was when I first watched it, right? I loved it. I really enjoyed it. I went early screen off, and I loved it. I was like, I can't wait to hear audience reaction towards this because a lot of people are going to think it's a hipsters getting killed movie, and it's not. But the backlash hasn't really been bad because it's a good movie. You know what I mean?
I love this movie, but I will flat out tell you, I despised the last 10 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
Even though it was cool that you're like, oh, we get to legitimize those aliens, I thought her being chased around that dog alien was way overdrawn. And then I thought it was just kind of silly, her being basically chased on foot by a spaceship. I thought it was all dumb, but I liked – the thing is that I didn't let it ruin it for me because I enjoyed – the first, like, whatever, 80 minutes so much that at the end I was just like, oh, fun. Connection to Cloverfield, I guess. Like, now we're just going into video game bonkers mode. But I didn't think it fit at all.
So you guys know me.
Do we?
The last 10 minutes, I was on board until a certain thing was used to kill Mr. Beak Alien. And I felt...
Well, no, but because what she did was...
I felt it was an egregious waste of good stuff.
Well, I think that what she did was she found a bottle of the most volatile chemical in the universe and made a Molotov cocktail out of it because it couldn't have been vodka. That's what I'm saying. Okay, fine. It couldn't have been scotch.
Mad Dog 2020 mixed with Bacardi 151 mixed with ectoplasm.
It couldn't have been Mad Dog 2020 mixed with Bacardi 151 because that would have just been like – oh, I got a little burnout on the inside of my mouth to that alien. That's all that would have been. It wouldn't have exploded a spaceship of an alien wearing a turtle shell ship. I don't even know how to describe that.
It's like Russian roulette vodka. It's like we don't know what's in it.
She basically threw a Molotov cocktail in the middle of a football field, and you had the Dark Knight Rises where the whole thing went underground. Like,
let me tell you something. You shouldn't waste good scotch on killing aliens, all right? See, that's where she and I differ. She kills the alien by blowing it up by using scotch. I just would have opened the scotch bottle and had a good drink before I died.
There you go.
And then that alien would have been like, he's got like the 62 doll bomb or whatever it was called.
I'm like, hey, Mr. Alien, I got scotch. I'll waste it if you eat me. And he's like, oh, dang.
What? That alien looked more like a grabber than a Cloverfield monster. Maybe that's why the alcohol affected it so much. They should have called it 10 Grabber Scottish Island, Irish Island Lane.
Yeah. No, you're right. Like, it was a descendant. That's what I was thinking, too. I'm like, grabbers.
Yeah. And that thing chasing her before that dog alien was like the sentinel thing from Edge of Tomorrow. So this was really Edge of next week on 10 Grabber Irish Island.
Ooh.
Oh, wow.
There's my meta movie. There's my fourth wall breaking Deadpool style. Boom. That just happened.
That just exploded like that scotch in that alien's mouth.
That's right. Let that simmer in your brains like the most explosive scotch on the planet.
I hate how these movies – like I watched Last Man on Earth the other day and they were drinking 50-year-old Macallan. I hate how these movies just like make it seem like it's everywhere.
It's like because I'm the last person on Earth, I just stumbled across this.
I mean I would scour the globe looking for it. I would. I would visit every – I'd take a tugboat to Scotland. I wouldn't even know how to get there.
It's somewhere over the sea.
Hey, Mark, did you put gas on the tugboat? No, but I brought a lot of booze.
There you go.
Yeah, I mean, the gasoline has got to be at least like 10% ethanol anyway, so, you know.
And I would bring some of that scotch that Mary Elizabeth Winstead used, and that shit would make the tugboat fly.
It's like rocket fuel.
But though it's good, like, I don't know. I think this could be the year that Goodman gets nominated. Mary Elizabeth Winstead, I think she's a very good actress. I'm glad that she's getting noticed because she was really great in Smashed. And I liked her character a lot. This is going to sound weird about Mary Elizabeth Winstead, but like I kind of buy – like this sounds weird. But like Emily Blunt in Edge of Tomorrow in Sicario and Edge of Meatball Sandwich, Negasonic Mutant Band-Aid. You know, like, but I, Mary Elizabeth Winstead in this movie, I bought her as like a, I bought her character. I kind of buy her as a, this sounds weird, but a lot of times there's actors you don't buy as like a man. Like, you know, Sean Connery, you're like, that's a man. Like Mary Elizabeth, I bought her as like a really strong-willed woman. Like there was no.
Strong, scared, desperate, and smart.
And she, she kept her wits about her. Like she, no, it was good. Like I believed her in this movie. And I also believed Goodman, like with his strength and bulk, like he had like kind of crazy strength. I think the arm hurting the arm was smart because then the guy was kind of at a disadvantage to Goodman, so we don't know how he hurt his arm, but now we know that he can't really attack because his arm is hindered, so that might have been just a plot device to kind of keep him helpless throughout the movie. But I think Winstead's good. I think she's had some poor choices of movies, a lot of bad horror movies. Even though Final Destination is not bad, but
she was okay in that. You know, her real falters were the Thing remake and the Black Christmas remake, and for that though, I think the writing just kind of shoehorned in some stereotypical woman character or a woman character for the sake of a woman character in The Thing.
Yeah,
that I mean, it's like here's a woman scientist in a scenario that looks just like The Thing, but now you're a scientist and you're a woman. Make it happen.
And they couldn't put a sombrero on her.
I know, and she couldn't grow a beard.
Yeah. And so, but she's really good in this movie. She's not, you're with her. You kind of like her immediately. There's a lot of theories around, so go look, you know, online about the theories of Cloverfield. But no, I bought her as a character. I was really pretty tense with Goodman. And I thought just he scared me. He was scary. And that doesn't happen much in cinema for me. And there's actually a post now saying how great he's like America's best leading man. And they broke down all of his leading roles as compared to his supporting roles. And he's like, technically, like several of the films that have won Best Picture, Argo, he's in, The Artist, he's in. Like, he's in a bunch of Oscar winning films, Oscar nominated. He's like one of our best supporting players, and he's been so for a long time. And I think this movie, it was directed by a first time director. It was good. Talent was all around behind the camera, and I enjoyed it.
So, by the way, so we've mentioned a few times, like, your old article, the tank top horror. Yeah. And in this, they really tank top horrored Mary Elizabeth Winstead, which for listeners who don't get that, it's like how the final girl or just one of the woman victims that you see a lot is always running around in a tank top, usually sweaty or wet for some reason, or they're in their underwear, but it usually comes down to a tank top. And in this, we kind of start getting to know her after her opening scenes where she's in like these little cute kind of sexy type boy shorts underwear in her tank top. And then later she's in a tank top the whole movie. And these kinds of things can sometimes hurt the credibility of a character. And if anything, you walk away from the character saying, I bought her desperation, but you seldom find their strength credible.
Yeah.
And she completely overcame that. Like in the beginning, I was like, oh, she looks sexy. But then I forgot it almost right away when I see how scared she is and how careful she is and how thoughtful she is. And it kind of wiped that slate clean, even though you still have her masquerading around in a cute tank top the whole time.
She is the female version of Kurt Russell with sleeveless shirts.
Dude, there you go. And barefoot most of the time, too.
Yeah, that's right.
Is that why I have a crush on her? She's the female version of Kurt Russell.
Do you have a crush on Bruce Willis?
No, Kurt Russell.
Who's Bruce Willis? Why Bruce Willis?
No,
I thought we were just talking about Die Hard and Bruce Willis, and he said a crush.
Wait, we're talking about Bruce Willie?
No,
who are you talking about?
We're talking about Kurt Russell.
He said if she's a female version of Kurt Russell, do we have a crush on her?
No,
I was thinking of Die Hard, and I was thinking of Bruce Willis, and that's why I said barefoot.
Do you have a crush on Bruce Willis, Levengood?
I don't know, man. Maybe it's because I'm looking at myself on the screen in Skype, and I have a hairline like Bruce Willis. Maybe that's why I thought that.
You need to kind of squint your upper lip together and do like, hey guys, you welcome to the party, pal. Yeah.
Don't worry about time travel. It's just so confusing. Yeah. Well, just don't even think about it.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I'm clearly insane.
No, but tank top horror, you know, that's not just a thing for like any actress like Jennifer Lawrence, Oscar winner, Hilary Swank, Oscar winner, Elizabeth Olsen, future Oscar winner, Jessica Chastain. Like, it's actually a thing. Like, it's a thing that happens. It's like, yep. it's a horror movie. Kristen Stewart. It's a horror movie trope that I think a lot of good actresses have to survive to move to. It's like the moving on to the next level. They level up after they survive their tank top horror. But she actually got in a good one, so that bodes well for her. This might be the highest. Well, aside from Wreck, it might be the highest rated tank top horror type film.
I'd buy that.
Yeah. You buy that for a bottle of scotch?
I'd buy that. For the most combustible scotch on the planet. What is the most combustible scotch on the planet?
It's probably a blended scotch called like sheep's turd. And it's like a blend of a 3-6 and ethanol. And it's like drank in a coastal village where the people pretty much only live to about 23. Because at 18, they start drinking it. And then it kills them in 5 years.
All right. It just melts their liver away.
Yeah.
All right. Well, when we start talking about combustible scotches, I think it's time to...
Time to start a new podcast.
Time to start wrapping up the podcast. Oh. Yeah. Then
five most combustible scotches of film. Go. Yeah.
All right, guys. Before we wrap up and start the that other podcast, do we have any plugs you want to make?
Yeah, guys. Make sure to head to iTunes. Blog Talk Radio. Make sure to subscribe, review, rate. We'd love to hear what you think about the pod. Stop by Shark Dropper, check out what they have. And also, guys, head to Movies, Films, and Flicks on Twitter. Head to John's Horror Corner on Twitter. Head to Movies, Films, and Flicks on Facebook. And give us some questions. Like, if you're drinking combustible scotch, if you're fist fighting, and you come up with an interesting question, just send it to us. We'll answer.
Oh, loving good. Anything you want to plug?
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think it was a year or two ago, Mark put us on a long waiting list to get on The Lamb, which is, what is that, the Large Ass Movie Blog Collective?
The Large Ass Movie
Blog
Bloggers. Large Association of Movie Bloggers.
Oh. Largest Association. Oh, it was Large Ass Movie Bloggers Syndicators.
Well, I mean, you're kind of right. Yeah,
is that a sign of making it? I don't even know. Like, have we made it now? Should I just buy my fur coat now that we're on the lamb?
I mean, I bought one.
Yeah.
You got?
Yeah,
did just... you go? Did you go like Scott Mendelson style or Kurt Russell style?
Well, I'm trying to. Well, I'm actually trying to grow my beard out so it forms around me like Ben Mendelson. But I bought like, the Brad Pitt fur coat from Fight Club, just like the little one for now. I can't afford the full Mendelson.
I'm gonna go Cruella DeVille.
That's like 40 yaks, dude. I'd have to kill 40 yaks to have Ben Mendelsohn's fur coat and slow
just,
vest.
Just go ahead and buy it, Love and Good, but keep the receipt. Just in case.
Yeah. Keep the receipt. Yeah. Don't go to any
smoky bars.
Right.
Leave the tag on.
Yeah. Don't drink scotch around it.
All right, guys. For my co-host, Mark Hoffmeyer.
Thank you for listening, guys. I'm very earnest about this. I really appreciate everything you've done for us.
Don't listen to him. John Lemongood.
And just... send your checks, make them payable to John M. I mean, Movies, Films, and thank you guys.
Don't listen to me either. I've been your host, John Laswell. Thank you so much for listening.
Sheep's turd.
You know, sheep's turd, combustible scotch. We've got. We did a lot this episode. Really,
dude. If anyone from sheep's turd, highly combustible scotch is listening, we will accept promotions.
And listen, guys, if we have any, like, really arty people out there, can you make us a sheep turd combustible scotch?
Yeah, so we could sell
your business card for us.
So we could sell it on the website. All right, guys. We'll see you.
T-minus 5 seconds till shark drop. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Drop the shark! Go! Go! Go!
This podcast is a Shark Dropper Studios production.